Greetings, soccer friends. Welcome back. This is For the Glory KC. We bring a mix of in-depth Kansas City soccer knowledge and a more casual perspective. I'm Chad Smith, associate editor at kcsoccerjournal.com, who's going to take you a little bit more in-depth. And I'm joined, as always, by my wife, Sheena, who's going to give us that casual perspective. Hey, Sheena, what's up?
Hey, Chad. Hi, soccer friends. Not much. What's up with you, Chad?
Oh, you know, life. We just got back from the KC Comets game. Oh, it didn't go the way we wanted. So on today's show, we're going to talk about that Comets game. We're going to talk about Sporting Kansas City losing. We're going to talk about a rumor for Sporting Kansas City. Oh, finally a rumor. Taylor Twellman's got a little something for us. The KC Current made a big comeback. It's not all good news around the Current, though, unfortunately. And we're going to bring back errors and corrections, partially because of the audio of last week's podcast. Thanks for sticking with us. And of course, the digital crawl, y'all. But if you are enjoying the podcast, and if you're not, I don't want to hear about it. No, I'm just kidding. You should tell me privately. But if you're enjoying it, you're loving it, you're like, hey, this is five-star worthy, I want to tell all my friends and family, go on Apple Podcasts, go on Spotify, give us those five-star ratings and review. Also, if you really like the podcast, you're like, hey, you know this thing I get for free? I would like to give these people money for doing the thing they do. There's a link in the description of the podcast where you can do just that. And who knows what we'll use it on. Probably soccer tickets, let's be honest. We spent way more on soccer tickets in the last 2 weeks than we've made in the lifetime of this podcast. So that just kind of goes to show you the massive bucks we're raking in over here. But anyways, Sheena, we saw the KC Comets tonight. Only our second Comets game of the year. The first time they didn't let me on the field. So I don't know what the deal was. Maybe I could have helped out there. And unfortunately, it did not work out. I couldn't have helped. I'm terrible. But what were your thoughts on the game going? Playoff atmosphere, MALSL Cup Finals, the Ron Newman Cup.
Yeah, I was very excited to go. We made a spur-of-the-moment decision this morning, being spontaneous, and just that you and I went, which was fun. I don't feel like we go on a lot of date nights since we have a child, but it was fun to get away for a few hours. Obviously, like you said, it wasn't the outcome we wanted, but it was just a great atmosphere. It was a lot of fun. I almost have a little bit more respect for like indoor soccer because it's so fast paced and I just would be so exhausted. Like I felt like all these players were one catastrophic injury away from like their soccer career ending. So it was wild. I saw some things I had never seen before, like the Comets goalie. He just held the ball for like 2 minutes for no reason. Nobody was like coming after him. I've never seen that in soccer before for that long. And
I agree. And I want to say too, he didn't hold it. It was just like at his feet because you obviously can't hold the ball that long. And no one approached him. And the crowd was loving it. They were losing their mind. It probably helps that the Comets were ahead at that point. And they're like, oh, you're wasting away time. You don't want to take advantage of these minutes. And I guess Chihuahua, they got the last laugh on that, though. They didn't need those minutes, I guess. We could have used those 2 minutes back.
Yeah. So that was interesting because, like I said, I've never seen that happen before. And the way the crowd was cheering, I thought maybe that's like a normal thing that happens, but maybe not. And then the other thing that happened towards the end of the game was they took the goalie off and had somebody in like a light blue penny, and they played with like a sixth player instead of a goalie. And that really stressed me out, not having a goalie on the field. I mean, it wasn't going to matter because they were playing, they were going to either tie it up or lose. So I understand why they took the goalie off. But again, never seen that before in soccer. So just a completely different experience. There's the blue cards, which I know we've talked about on previous episodes of the podcast. And so we got to see some power plays for 2 minutes. The Chihuahua team was down a player. So aspects of that were really fun. I just really like watching the Comets. I think indoor soccer is just way more exciting. They have music pumping the whole time. I think last time we went, I said it's like a club, but they're playing soccer because they have all the hits playing. But yeah, that was kind of my...
All the hits. I feel like they were mostly playing old songs.
The hits from
what kind of club are you going to, Sheena?
Well, the clubs I went to in the early 2000s, so
they were not playing that music. I will tell you that right now.
Oh,
but
well.
So Sheena, it's called the Ron Newman Cup. Are you familiar with Mr. Ron Newman? He has a Kansas City connection.
I've never heard of him until today.
Oh, well, that as a casual fan, this does not surprise me. But he was the very first coach of the Kansas City Wiz and Wizards, if you want to be technical. So, yeah, back from the first season in 96 through, I think, 99, something like that, if I'm remembering right. But, yeah, Ron Newman. Named the whole MASL title game is named after him. So that's pretty cool.
How did he get the whole cup named after him? Like, what is that all about?
Now you're going too deep. I like to get a bit more deep. I can't go deep enough to tell you. I'm going to assume he had a long indoor career, maybe. Actually, he mostly played outdoor soccer. He looks like he was an indoor manager for a long time. Yeah, I just pulled up his Wikipedia. The Los Angeles Skyhawks, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers, San Diego Sockers. That's your neck of the woods. Coach from 80 to 94. Only 15 years was he the coach in San Diego through your entire adolescence.
Is he still alive?
No, he passed away in 2018, according to Wikipedia.
Well, that's a bummer, but that's really cool. They have something named after him.
Yeah, a little Kansas City connection and a San Diego connection, just like you and I. Kansas City, San Diego connection here.
Wow.
Cool. Well, I'll give quick thoughts on the Comets game as well. It was fun. All right, I had a negative tone there. I think I can't help but be a little upset that they lost. It's not over. They get to go back to Chihuahua, Mexico and play the game two. And if necessary, game three will be immediately after game two, like a 15-minute mini game thing for the whole title. Pretty tough to win in Mexico. Teams have really struggled down there, but you never know. Anything could happen. They played them very close. They just led for so long. It's such a bummer that they lost. They were up 3-1. Then they gave up a goal late. I leaned over to Sheena and I said, they are going to regret all these missed chances. I cannot tell you how many breakaways the Comets had, and then they didn't get a shot off. It was kind of frustrating. There was some weird fouls that, you know me, I love complaining about refs, like where clearly the Kansas City player got fouled, but then they got called for the foul. Nothing that I don't think really altered the game. There was this foul that they did a review on towards the end of the game that they were trying to go back and give a foul. And it looked like a foul, but it's the kind of thing they're never going to call on a review because there had been a handball later in the sequence that then led to the advantage that the Chihuahua had and then ended up scoring and taking a lead. So it was ironic because they were chanting, "I believe that we will win," during the entire timeout. Sheena was like, "I don't know if this is the time for this during this video review." And then they immediately scored the game-winning goal right after. And I was like, "Yeah, you called that one."
I feel like when you're chanting something and you're either tied or behind, you shouldn't be chanting, "I believe that we will win." I mean, I guess you're doing it to pump the players up.
You believe.
Up.
Yeah, you believe.
Well, unfortunately, believing wasn't enough. Like, I don't know. I was just like, I feel like because they're chanting this, it's definitely not going to go their way.
Well, since we're talking about losing, do you want to get on to the Sporting Kansas City game?
Yeah, I guess we might as well get it over with.
Yeah, it's unavoidable. I don't know about you, Sheena. We'll switch gears. We'll talk about Sporting Kansas City. They lost 2-1 to Minnesota United. I'm feeling kind of drained. This is the 10th game of the season. It feels like at this point, you kind of start to know who your team is. And last year, the 11th game is the one that turned it around. So maybe next week will be the big penalty. We'll be like, yes, this is the thing. This is why Sporting Kansas City, they have life again. But it's going to be really hard to get life next week because they're on the road at Real Salt Lake, which they historically struggle badly. They're actually pretty good on the road at Minnesota United historically, but they could not get the job done on Saturday night. They gave up a goal just after the first minute. So in the second minute, Nemanja Radoja lost his mark. Tap in on the back post, just a easy goal. I don't know. It was just a rough start. Any thoughts about the start of the game, the opening goal? I know I'm a Nemanja Radoja truther, but he's had some down moments at times this year for sure.
Yeah, I wouldn't say he is as great as I think you think he is. I think he's good, but he's not great, at least in the last couple games. I think what is frustrating is that I think what's frustrating from last season to this season is that we had an okay start at the beginning of the season. And last season, we just knew we were great. But now it feels like nothing's going our way. And we're playing Real Salt Lake next week. And they are the number one top dog in the Western Conference. So, I mean, unless something happened with whatever games were today or last night. But as of last night, when the Sporting game ended, they were the number one seed. So
it's still in first. You're right.
Yeah. So it's not like it's about to get any easier. We're going to maybe catch a break. And we typically do play the games with Real Salt Lake are always close anyways because of that rivalry that we had at one time. So I'm nervous about that. At the same time, I just don't understand. You and I had this conversation on the couch last night that like Peter Vermes is at least trying new formations, but those formations aren't working. So it's time to switch it up when you're basically having the same lineup start every week. There was an exception. Jake Davis was out because of yellow card accumulation. So we did get to see Caden Pierre come on, but it's like, I think you need to take a hard look at the starters and maybe evaluate, are these the people that should be starting? And we've had this conversation for the last couple weeks that Peter Vermes thinks he's putting the best lineup forward, but it's not producing the results that prove that. And that's where I get really frustrated. It's just after that first goal and the first minute and a half, I was like, well, this is going to be a really long game. And it was a really long game.
The formation actually is something I want to talk about. So they're in that 4-2-3-1 again, right, where Remy plays back next to Nemanja Radoja at defensive midfielder. And if you look at the times they've played this formation, they played it for the first time against the LA Galaxy. And that was six games ago. Man, time is flying by. And they got ahead, but they lost. Then they went away from it for a game against Toronto because Pulido was out and unavailable. So they went back to the 4-3-3. They won. And then they've been back in the 4-2-3-1 every game since, and they're all ties or losses. So I think there's something to be said that it's not working, right? It's usually potent offensively. Until last night, they hadn't scored less than two goals. It was two or three goals in every single game they rolled that formation out. So clearly something was working. They got behind early, so that maybe changed things a little bit because teams could play them differently knowing that they're behind and that they needed a goal. But I think that's part of the problem. And then we go back to Rado. Yeah, you're saying, hey, he's not playing that good. He's being asked to do something different because he doesn't usually play next to somebody. He's used to being alone as the lone defensive midfielder. And him and Remy are having to cover ground and read the game in different ways. And maybe that's part of the problem. If he's so used to how things typically go, this whole team is so used to how things typically go that they are drilled ad nauseum in the 4-3-3. I remember people are like, oh, I'm happy that they're not in the 4-3-3. They're trying something new. Yeah, but it's actually kind of not working, right? They can't close out any games. I don't know if it's the formation to blame, but I think there could be something to that with, you know, Radoja and Voltaire next to each other that changes up the midfield. Pulido doesn't work the same as somebody like Tommy, who would usually be in the midfield. It's not like Pulido's not trying, but he's just not pacey enough to press. But there was one instance last night where he was supposed to go press a player, and it was just like he was never going to get there. And like I could hear Vermes yelling at him to press, and there was no chance. He just does not have the pace for that. And this formation keeps him too far away from the goal, in my opinion. Now, he did score. He got the only goal. So he got in the box when it mattered. But I don't think that this is – I don't think it's working. I don't think it's working.
It's definitely not working. What I'd like to see is for them to go back to whatever formation they did that first game of the season, where I believe Eric Tommy and Remy Voltaire switched sides. They seem to have some success doing that, and I think they've gotten away from that. I don't know if formation's that great, but based on
that was the 4-3-3 still. They just basically so they play two number eights further up the field in the midfield, and they just flip-flopped. I actually thought they've looked their best at times when they're back to Remy on the right and Tommy on the left. A lot of people are complaining about Daniel Shallowy's disappeared. It's because there's nobody to connect the ball to him. He's got Leibold over there, but he doesn't have a midfielder that's pushing the ball forward. No offense to your boy Remy, but that's not how he plays. And when Tommy's over there, the ball moves forward. Tommy's not Gadi Kinda, obviously, but he does attack more than Remy.
Yeah, I mean, I would say to me, I feel like, and I might be wrong in this, that Remy and Nemanja Radoja, they are very similar. No? You like shook Radoja. Your head.
It's hard. It's Radoja.
I felt like I said
it
different.
I know, it's hard to say.
But I feel like they're similar.
You know what makes it tough is the announcers say it wrong all the time, too. Unless you get Nate or somebody that actually knows how to say it. And frankly, we were saying it wrong until like 2 months ago. So maybe less. Who can remember? The time is a flat circle.
But I feel like they're very similar in that, like, Remy's a hustler. Nemanja's a hustler, too. You just like gave a look that maybe he's not.
I think Remy is a hustler. I think Nemanja is not very quick. He does not cover a lot of ground. I think he reads the game really well, but he's being asked to read the game from a different spot. And maybe that's leading to some ineffectiveness in defense, because that's what's happening, right? They're giving up too many goals. Although, I mean, Radoja was in the wrong spot on the first goal. You want to talk about the second goal? I feel like that's where all the controversy's at.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, don't sound so enthusiastic about it, Chino. Oh my gosh, I'm not going to force you to talk about it. I could talk about it alone. All right, so the second goal, Minnesota scores. Caden Pierre, poor Caden Pierre. He doesn't get a lot of minutes. So, of course, when he gets some minutes, everything's going to be scrutinized. I'm sure we're never going to see him again for a long time because he got just destroyed on this play. Not that a bunch of other players haven't made a bunch of mistakes. They've let in a ton of goals this year. It's not all KP, but he's got some a little bit of guilt on this one, I would say. They've allowed 18 goals this year. That's kind of wild. Only two teams worse than the entire Western Conference. But he doesn't track either runner, Rosales or Pookie. He's clearly supposed to track one of those two people and got neither of them. So they kind of run around him. He's a little lost on that play. And then there's the cross that comes in, and it's a tap in on the back post again. Somebody's wide open on the backside yet again, basically the same spot it felt like as the first goal. The controversy around this goal is the entire internet thought, hey, he's offside. And so did Peter, which we'll talk about that in a second. But Sheena, did you think he was offside on the second goal, the second Minnesota goal?
It's really hard to say. I can't call offsides. Like I understand it, but I can't see it. And especially when it's as close as it was, like I'm too casual. So no, I had no thoughts about it. All my views were based off of what you were telling me.
I was influencing you. Okay. Well, I thought live, hey, maybe he's offside. And the VAR checked it. There was a bit of a pause after the second goal before they eventually get it going. When you look back at the broadcast, I'll put the links to some tweets into the article so you all can check it out for yourself. But when you look back to the broadcast, there was only one angle showed. It's not a great angle, and it's definitely not straight down the line. So there's this like bending of the lens effect, right? It's not perfect. It's hard to tell. Angles can play tricks on your eyes. I could see why people would think it was a goal, but then there's this really good Twitter account at Offside Modeling. I'll put their tweet into the article and into the description of this podcast. You can check it out for yourself. But they said he's onside by about an inch. So about as close as it can get. But if he was offside by about an inch, you're not going to make that call. So I'm okay with, even if he was offside an inch, that goal standing, because it's too close to call. And I could see why the VAR didn't intervene. To me, the thing was, how was Sporting Kansas City going to react? How were they going to bounce back? And they did get a really nice goal. Radoja, who we were just crapping on, had a really good ball over the top. Like somebody passed the ball back to him, and he immediately clipped it over. Daniel Shalloway got onto the end of it. And then really good vision from Shalloway to lay the ball back up into the box. And Pulido was getting into the box, which if he's in the box more often, he'd probably score more goals. And he did a really good job of finishing to make it 2-1 before the half. But unfortunately, that was the end of the scoring. Nothing much really happened in the rest of the game. There were moments here or there. There were missed fouls here or there, I guess. But nothing egregious, nothing that I feel like Sporting deserved to win this game.
They definitely weren't playing to win. There was a couple things I was going to add.
When you say that, it makes me laugh every time. Like, of course they want to win, right? What is
well,
that?
Well, of course they do, but they didn't. Well, I just feel like they could have played a little harder. I don't know. It's easy for me to judge. As somebody who doesn't play soccer, is not in shape to play soccer. Like, of course I can be judgmental, but yeah, I don't know what it means. I just say it. I think
everybody says it. Don't feel bad. I think I get what you mean. Like, they weren't doing the things necessary to create a win, right? They just wanted to win. They just weren't doing anything that showed us that they wanted to win.
I don't think anybody wants to lose, for what it's worth. Like, nobody.
Right.
So yeah, they wanted to win, but they weren't creating the opportunities for themselves as a team to win. So there's that. I will say a couple of things about the second half. Peter Vermees, you brought in three different players. He took Caden Pierre out, brought in Kyrie Shelton, which we can talk about in a moment. He brought on Johnny Russell, which the announcers were big Johnny Russell fans. Like I counted, I think they talked about Johnny Russell before he came in 6 times and then 2 more times once he got in. They were overhyping him, making it sound like he was going to be the game changer, and he didn't do anything. No offense to him. And then
you tried to get all our Twitter followers to take a shot at every mention of Johnny Russell. I thought they were going to die if they were actually playing your game, because before you put that tweet out at halftime, and then before the second half had even kicked off, both announcers had made a reference to Russell coming into the game. And I was like, yeah, they're going to die. Our followers are going to die on Twitter. Sorry, y'all.
And then I forget who it was, but somebody added another game on top of that, responding to one of my tweets, but I can't remember what it was now. But yeah, I forget who was the third sub who came in. I can't
think of his name. Vargas.
Yeah, Vargas. So he came in as well. So I'll give a little bit of prop that we saw 3 subs come in. Peter Vermees used the window, all 3 window opportunities. But I just feel like when he's bringing players in, he's not even bringing in the best equipped players to come in. Like Johnny Russell isn't having a great season, so I don't feel like he's clearly still recovering from whatever injury he's got going on. Obviously, I don't know the injury. You probably know it, Chad.
I want to say hamstring, but I'm not 100% certain.
Okay, so he has a hamstring issue, but he's just not playing to, you know, what we're used to seeing him play. So I feel like at this point, he should only be coming in if we're ahead, not if we're behind or tied, because he just doesn't have the speed to keep up. Like, he was pretty unimpressive.
Yeah, let me jump in here. I am going to disagree a little bit, because if it's not working, that's what we basically always ask for, right? We ask for subs, we ask for someone to come on, and we ask for them to try to change the game. Now, he didn't necessarily change the game this time, but then think back 2 weeks ago to the St. Louis game. He came on, and he doesn't get credit for the assist, right? But he delivered that ball into Shallowy that ends up in an own goal. And then I feel like he was part of the third goal, too. Now I'm drawing a blank on who scored that third goal off the top of my head. But I would disagree. I think that he's not playing great, but you're trying to change the game. Nothing was happening. Nothing was working. So putting on Russell makes sense. I thought the Shelton sub made less sense, right? We were told after the game by Peter Vermees that it was because Caden Pierre was not 90 minutes fit and he couldn't go the whole game and he was cramping up is why they brought Shelton on. So that made a little bit more sense to me. And I suppose if you're going to play anybody, like, he has at least a tiny bit of experience playing right back. But I don't know. I mean, he made like one mistake that I saw that it didn't matter. Minnesota didn't capitalize on it, so it didn't have a big impact on the game. But Pierre definitely provided a lot more going forward, I thought, than Kyrie, ironically, since Kyrie is actually a forward.
Well, I thought, yeah, I mean, the sub in the moment didn't make sense to bring Kyrie on. But I also knew once Kyrie was healthy enough to come back into the game, Peter Vermees loves him, so of course he's going to find a way to bring him into the game. I don't feel like Kyrie's the reason we lost. I don't feel like you said, he did anything too, you know, and like significant to ruin the game. He also did, like, he was just a non-factor. He was there. I saw he got a lot of hate online. I don't feel like in last night's game that was deserved or needed, because he really did nothing good or bad. He was just kind of out there with his frosted tips or whatever his hairstyle is. But yeah, I wish that he would have brought Vargas on sooner, because he had some speed and we just kind of were slow. So I just wish he would rotate some other guys in, because a point that you made earlier is that Caden Pierre didn't have a good game, and one of the goals was because of Caden Pierre, and we probably won't see him again. But like, how are these players on the bench ever going to get better if they're never getting the opportunity to play? Like, they might get loaned down to the twos, but it's still not the same like caliber. I just feel like you're expecting somebody who doesn't get to play a lot to come in and be perfect and make big plays. And that's just not realistic if you're not getting the opportunity to constantly play. So I feel bad, because I like Caden Pierre. I definitely think Jake Davis is the better right back. So it'll be nice to have him back, but it's just unfair to these players who don't get a lot of play time. Your Felipe Hernandez, Vargas.
Felipe did play for SKC too today, so there's that. But most of those guys, like you said, they don't even get on for the twos. Like Steven Afrifo was supposed to play last week and he was going to start and got hurt in warmups. Marinos Giannis, he just sits the bench. He never plays for the ones or the twos. They're not getting minutes, like you were saying. So, of course, they're not going to be effective. The U.S. Open Cup is coming up, so I imagine we'll see a lot of those guys in the Open Cup. But you're going to have to start rotating your team. The starting the same guys over and over, especially when they haven't won in quite a while.
Yeah.
Unless it's four games without a win. Do something different. Change the formation back. I think if you change the formation back and you started Alanis Vargas on the wing, I had my prediction way back against the LA Galaxy was he would play right wing or maybe Steven Afrifa, and that they wouldn't do all this wild formation change thing. It's like kind of worked. So Peter seems to believe in it, but it hasn't worked in the sense that it's all ties and losses. There's no wins. You got to win some games. I think that's, we play to win the games.
It's just been a very mediocre season, which is frustrating. It's frustrating on a different level from last season. Last season was just depressing. This is just like, okay, we're going through this again. I think the difference is that, I think you said week 11 is when we started improving, which is going to be next week's game. If they win, cool, maybe we'll have another repeat of last season, but it's not like, again, it goes back to a point I said last week. Why do we want to be mediocre when we could be great? Like, why are we settling for these ties and losses when maybe we could win if we rotated players, tried different players coming out? Like, what if we had Eric Tommy and Vargas out at the same time instead of Polito and Eric or Willy Agata? Like, I don't know. I'm just, I don't know. It's not
play
working. Something
it.
Needs
See
to change.
Works.
Yeah. What do you have to lose? Like, we're in 11th place right now. We're below the playoff line. Like, it's not working. So let's just try something new. Like, it feels like Peter Vermes is stuck in, like, this is what I know works and I'm not willing to try something new. I know these players are going to give me the best outcome, but they're not. Like, we're not getting the best outcome. So let's try something different. It's very frustrating.
Well, this feels like a natural transition to talk about the press conference. So the thing that got all the attention from the post-game press conference was Vermes holding up a tablet. If you haven't seen it, Meme Monday on Reddit is going to be vicious because people are going to put so many different things on that tablet and show, oh, Peter was holding up. My favorite one I saw so far was from Jimmy Mack. He showed me this one that was the NWSL standings. He was showing the current in first place on his tablet, which I thought was pretty funny. There was a few really good ones. One about Bob Marley saying, you know, his comments last week that he's not worried. And that was, you know, the Bob Marley song where he sings about that. No worries for the rest of your days, right? Is that Bob Marley? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't always know music very well. Oh, sing, go for it.
No, I'm not. I have the worst voice. I can't believe I even did it a little bit. I know,
when I talked over you, I ruined it.
I know.
Or I saved you. I guess it depends how we want to look at things. So let's talk about the post-game press conference. So one of the questions that I actually got to ask was, you've probably heard Peter say this before, he wants to see 10 games from his team to know, hey, once 10 games are gone, I can kind of know who my team is and how they are. So I said, hey, 10 games are gone. Give us your assessment. What are the first 10? And I'm going to give you, it's kind of a long quote, but I'm going to read the whole thing to you because I think it's got some triggering things in it. So Vermes says, quote, I think that we've given up points where we were in a very good position to get points. Sometimes it's a bounce here or there, but I really like our ability to attack. For the most part, I like the way that we defend a lot of situations. So we're getting better there. I think we still have to work on closing games out, which I guess that's progress. Oh, resuming his quote. And I would say that some calls have been really poor over the 10 games that have gone against us. You can take the first 10 games at home, I'm sorry, the first game at home and start there and go down the list. Sometimes they will take points away from you as well, but I think we've got a good group and they've shown that they can attack. For the most part, They've shown that they can defend really well as a group. That was my emphasis, by the way. We have defended really well on the road as well, which is sometimes really difficult because the other team drives the game. I thought today we turned the tide in the second half and we put more pressure on them. I think the group is good and will continue to get better in the other areas. I actually think it's a really good group and a dangerous group, end quote. Sorry, I added my own commentary in there a couple of times. There was so much stuff that jumped out at me. Like, he thinks the defense defends well as a group. They've given up 18 goals. Like, that seems crazy to me. What are your initial thoughts?
I think it's funny he says that we're defending well on the road. Haven't we only had like 3 road games?
This was the fourth. And they did have a shutout. The only shutout was against LAFC on the road.
Okay. I mean, but still, like, it's just like funny some of the things he said about like the road game thing. We just lost on the road and we had like a pretty good record of beating Minnesota or at least tying on the road in their stadium. So it's, yeah, I don't know. There was a lot there. I don't agree with a lot of it.
Yeah, I was positive that he said that they got to do better about closing out games. So even though he said he wasn't worried about that last week, it sounds like, I feel like that's just something he said in the moment. Like he was being defensive because obviously you can't be okay with losing. I'm sure he went to the locker room and lost his mind about it, you know, to a certain extent. But I do think he's seeing positives where we're seeing kind of mediocrity. And it goes back to what we talked about last week and that article I wrote that they have most of the tools in their toolbox. Remember last year they kept saying, once I get all my tools back and I have all my tools, we're going to be a better team. We're going to have better results for it. And they did, but they have almost all their tools. They basically missed Russell. Pulido missed a single game that they won. What did Remy miss? One game maybe. So they haven't been missing most of their tools and they are not winning. They have 2 wins.
I mean, unless he's putting all the pressure on Logan and Dembe to get back.
Which is insane. If it's all about one left back, yeah, the left back shouldn't make that big of a difference. That said, if you had a better defensive left back, I think they probably would have finished a couple of these games off. So you never know.
Yeah, I think that he has coach goggles on. Mom goggles. You don't want to see the bad in your team or your kid. I feel like that's where he's at and that he can't admit that there's some faults. The other thing that kind of bothers me about the quote is about the calls. And yeah, there's been some shady calls, but I think this was a point we made all last season when they were doing bad. You can't have games be dependent on calls being called correctly. Like refs are going to make the wrong call or miss things. And it's up to your team to play past that and to win the games despite the bad reffing. And so it feels like he is very against the refs this season because there have been controversial plays, don't get me wrong, but you got to find a way to overcome it and still win the game. And we're not doing that.
Yeah, I was pretty upset about the refs last week. And I think looking back, I still feel like my anger was placed in the right spot. It was just a wild game in terms of what was called and what wasn't called. But this week, Ted Uncle, yeah, he probably missed a few calls here or there. The most egregious thing I think he did was that time where Leibold played that really good ball over the top to Shallowy, and then Leibold got crushed by Michael Boxall. He stopped play immediately to give the yellow card. If you're going to give a red card, sure, stop play immediately. But play advantage. Shallowy was going to be in on goal alone. Who knows what would have happened in that instance? And that got taken away from them. But outside of that, you know, refs are going to miss little calls here or there. It just hurt extra bad last week because the potential calls led immediately to goals versus nothing like that really happened this week that I can recall. To bring it to you, Sheena, right at the end of the game, your boy Remy did get smashed and nothing got called on it. And it was a turnover. I think the guy got the ball, but then he went knee into Remy. And then he was literally hobbling the rest of the game. So that has to be of a little bit of concern that he'll be available next week.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that didn't get called because it looked awful in the moment. I mean, and like you said, he was down for a minute or so, and then he was hobbling around the dying minutes of the game. So it's... Sorry, I don't know if you guys heard that. I have a puppy in my lap, and she just yawned.
I did not hear it, but we did get a foster dog today, and it's a girl, so we basically go immediately to Casey Current Players, and I just started listing first names, and we've landed on Ellie. So a little shout out to Ellie Wheeler. We don't know what kind of dog. Do you know what kind of dog this is? I can't even tell. He's going to be huge, is all I know.
Yeah, she's going to be huge. She's 9 weeks old. Somebody said part lab, maybe our next door neighbors.
Yeah, there's some lab vibe there.
So I don't know.
Mildly more ref complaining. I did look at my Twitter timeline. I was complaining about the 2 minutes of stoppage time, which did seem pretty short considering there were five sub windows, I think, or no, all six sub windows, I think, got used because they did an extra one in stoppage time. And then there was a couple of cards, right? That should probably be something. I remember Fontas got a yellow card for dissent in the first half. And then in the second half, Will Trapp crushed a guy. And somehow when he complained afterwards, he didn't get dissent. Robin Laud crushed Remy Voltaire. Moments later, crushed Johnny Russell. And they just played advantage. They never gave him, he got like a hard warning after the first foul. And then the second foul, nothing. So every game you can complain. I'm going to let it go. It literally is not why they lost. The expected goals in the game, 1.2 to Sporting Kansas City, 2.3 to Minnesota United. And it finished 2-1. So they've been finishing at a higher rate than they typically do, and they just didn't. This is probably one of the first times all season they've underperformed their expected goals just slightly. I don't know if 1.2 and getting one goal is really underperforming. That's probably a reach.
You know, the one thing is when you were talking about the one guy who was complaining to the ref and he didn't get a yellow, I saw on Twitter, I don't know what truth there is to this, that they like froze or rewound or whatever, and they saw that player was
cursed, like he,
like said the ref was a bad word.
You gotta be effing kidding me or something like this, or this is the worst effing thing I've ever seen, something like that. Yeah, I remember.
So
what did Fontas say to him to get a yellow? He must have been just losing his mind, huh? Talking about Ted Uncle's mom or something. I don't know.
It's so weird, the dissent
thing.
Which
I can't imagine, because he's so nice. He's such a nice person.
Well, the dissent thing is weird to me, because I don't feel like this typically is something they get a yellow on, and this is the second week in a row. Like, I don't know if there's been a rule. Yeah, I don't know if there's been like a rule change that you got to give him out more frequently for dissent. I don't know, but it's something I've noticed more the last couple weeks.
It always happens. Maybe it just hasn't consistently happened to Sporting. I was talking about this with some people online about how when games are physical, and the Minnesota game really wasn't that physical. It was a little bit physical, but nothing crazy. Nothing like the St. Louis game. And it doesn't favor Sporting, because the way they want to play is more attractive soccer, and you get your rhythm broken when you get fouled all the time. But I don't know. The dissent thing. If you said something, you said something. It's, you know, the refs, you got to be decent to them. I once got the sportsmanship award as a coach. So despite all my complaining, I was always very nice to the refs. I think I mentioned
you
that
bring
on
it,
before.
Yeah, a few times. I have a question for you, Chad. Last week, or maybe last week or the week before, you asked me if it was time to take Tim Melia out. He's given up 18 goals. And granted, I know some of that is the defense not helping him out. Is it time to see John Pulskamp, do you think?
That's a great question. And Pulskamp did play for SKC2 today. I don't know what happened. Sorry, y'all. We were at the Comets game. We came home. I'm going to watch it on YouTube. Probably when this is over, I'm going to go watch it tonight. But don't know how he did. Don't know how he performed. I have no blame for Melia on these two goals. The defenders let him down. They were tap-ins on the back post. I don't know what he's supposed to do. Somebody has to help out, and he didn't get a lot of help. So I wouldn't say this is a bench-worthy performance. And as we said last week, I don't anticipate Peter's going to bench him unless he's hurt or just does really bad.
Are you on the Vermes out train at this point, given how things are going? Because I keep seeing more of that online.
Anytime they lose, there's a certain subset of the online community that says Vermes out. And then some of them are like, but I've been saying that for 5 years. And I was like, 5 years? Well, that doesn't even make sense. Now, if you were saying it in 2022 when things were bad, or 2023 where it was bad for part of the year, or even at the beginning of this year, sure, you could say it about those moments. I guess 2019 was a bad year. They missed the playoffs that year. But then they had a string of decent results again. I am getting closer. And I'll tell you one other thing that's kind of weighing on my mind was, first off, he seemed like a crazy person holding this tablet up in the post-game presser complaining about an offside call that apparently wasn't offside according to the math and the one bad camera angle we have. He was even blaming that the attacker was beyond Danny Rosero, but it's either beyond the second to last defender or the ball. And the ball was further along than Rosero. So that was weird to me. And then he also complained that Agata should have got a penalty kick. And live, I thought Agata got taken down in the box too, but on replay, it's clear that he didn't get taken down. So there was nothing there. He tried to leap over the guy and he tripped. But the reason another kind of knock in the Vermees column is, I wonder if Sporting just get reffed poorly in games because of him, because he's been around forever. It seems like the referees don't like him. He's always yelling at the fourth official, the poor fourth official, who a lot of times the guy that is the fourth official is also a main referee in other games. So you have to stand there and listen to him. And then maybe the next time you're at a Sporting Kansas City game, you're the center ref. And you remember the 90 minutes of verbal abuse you had to take. I'm getting a little worn down wondering, can this team, I'm sure they're going to pull it together and make the playoffs. Like, I feel pretty decent that they'll find their form, but I don't know. Is that good enough anymore with almost everybody getting into the playoffs? I don't know. Where are you coming down?
I don't know that I'm Vermees out per se, but if there aren't going to be changes, if he's going to continue using the same lineup, bringing in subs that don't always make sense, then, and there's no change, then we need to have a change at the coaching position to see if that changes the outcome of the games. I feel like it would be tough to fire him in the middle of a season, because then you're basically probably giving up your season of any chance of playoffs. But
it'd be Benny Failhaber time if they fire him in the middle of a season. Gosh,
that'd be amazing.
I do like Benny. But Benny abuses the refs too, man. He yells at the ref. Like, I don't know if you can remember going to SKC2 games, but I watch a lot of them, and he's like losing his mind on the sidelines. So I don't know that it would fix that one specific problem. We'll see what happens. I'll give you a contrasting kind of final story from this game. Vermees mostly was happy in the post-game presser. He complained about the two, what he thought were missed calls, but he thought his team mostly played well and deserved a better result, yada, yada. Aaron Ramsey, the coach from Minnesota, who won, was pretty upset in his post-game presser about his team not executing some of the plans and tactics, and he had to change and make subs because they couldn't do the things he wanted them to do. I think that shows, like, hey, and he's brand new. He's only been coaching the team for a few weeks, but I don't know. There's something about that saying, hey, we won, but we can still be better. Vermees almost seems complacent. And it's the complacency of a person that's not worried about losing their job, right? It doesn't seem like he's worried about it. This is the beginning of his fifth five-year extension. We're only a few months into his five-year extension, so they're not going to fire him. They'd have to pay him for 5 years of nothing.
I am with you, though. Yeah, I think that's what fires up the fans, too, is that we're all pissed off that we're losing. And he's just like, I'm not worried about it. Like, very chill. And if this was the first season where this was happening, I'd be like, okay, but now it's a kind of a repeat of last season. It's a little bit different of a situation, obviously, because we've won and tied games. But it's still, we're below the playoff line. We could be a lot better. Like, we should have a better record. So it's always, to me, a little disconcerting when the coach is okay with everything and the fan base is fired up, because I understand we expect perfection, and it's tough because we have the Chiefs that are so well, Casey Current's so well, the Comets are doing so well. So it's like we have this, the Royals are doing really good this season. We have this really high standard for our Kansas City sports teams, and to have a coach who doesn't meet that passion of wanting to excel and do the best they can, or isn't pissed off enough that they're not winning, it's just not a good look. I don't know. I don't feel like I'm articulating my point well, because I have a puppy crying on me.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
No, I totally get it. Sometimes you just want him to be mad. Like, hey, you haven't won a game in four matches. Like, maybe you should be a little more upset instead of saying, I thought we played pretty well. And just, you know, sometimes we get an unlucky bounce. Sometimes the refs go against us. There's always an excuse, right? Let's just go get some results. Let's go execute it and go win some games. If they could do what they did last year, go on the road, win a hard game, they beat our Real Salt Lake, maybe they can change our minds. Maybe he can show us some life.
And that's the thing, is they're not playing passionate football or soccer right now. Football, we could call it football. They're not playing passionate.
It is football, yeah. It's
I okay. know. But they're not playing passionate soccer right now. It's very, I don't know, I don't want to say half-assed, but like I don't feel any passion from any particular player the last couple games. It's just, I don't know. I don't get that like feeling like, man, they want to win this. They're in it to win it. They just look tired, and they're probably tired because it's the same starters every week.
Maybe they are tired. 10 games of basically no rotation, right? A few players here or there, but mostly the same guys. I would say they care because you see how upset they are. Well, I see how upset they are in the locker room after a loss or a tie. You're seeing on the field. The yellow cards for dissent. They're upset because they want the calls to go the right way, and they think that the refs are getting those wrong. But like Peter said after the St. Louis game, or halftime of the St. Louis game, go out there and run through somebody. If they're not going to call it, run through them. And we weren't getting a lot of yellows for fouls again, so I don't know. Maybe they got to go run through somebody. They hate RSL, right? Let's go run through some RSL players and make an impact. That's it. If they are running out the same lineup again, which I suspect fully that they will, and then they would rotate midweek at Omaha, that could be a problem. Because altitude, they always struggle when they go to Utah. But I'm done talking about Sporting Kansas City. Well, at least the game. Are you good?
Well, I was going to just say one more thing, is that I think it's time they go to the ranch. I've been saying it for 3 weeks now, but like they don't feel like they're cohesive as a team. There's some sort of disconnect. I don't know what it is, but something's lacking, and they need a bonding experience, I think, to maybe help them get back on track.
You should tweet at Mike Illig on Twitter. You should. This is the same week where that happened last time. It was between games 10 and 11. So yeah, let's do it. Send them to the ranch, Mike. Okay, so a little bit more Sporting Kansas City talk, but this time let's talk about some roster moves. So Taylor Twellman, you may know him well. He seems to have the ear of Mike Illig. From everything we can tell, they seem to be buddy-buddy. And my colleague, Mike Kuhn, over at the KC Soccer Journal, he had a tweet kind of saying, he was talking about this article that The Athletic wrote, that they were ranking teams who did enough, who didn't do enough in terms of signings. And he said, hey, I expected Sporting to be in the like didn't do enough category. And Taylor Twellman replied to Mike saying, summer, watch, end quote. So just summer and watch. So it sounds like signings are coming. Peter Vermees actually went on the program on 810 WHB this week, too. He does kind of a semi-regular interview over there, and he basically said the same thing. I've been saying ever since the Kellen Acosta deal fell through and the three other signings that the KC Star reported that they tried to do that fell through, that I always thought, hey, it's going to happen in the summer. There's these new rules that we outlined a couple of podcasts ago. So that's kind of the background. There's two open roster spots, Shayna. What positions do you think that Sporting Kansas City should be targeting with their two open roster spots?
Oh, I don't know. Probably a better replacement for Jake Davis, I guess, since...
Ouch, so what, you're going to use one of two spots on a backup right back?
I don't know. I don't know.
This is why you're casual. I hate this take immediately.
Okay, well, that's fine. You put me on the spot, so I...
Would you like me to give an answer and then you can think while I'm talking?
No, I'm going to give my other answer right now. We have a real issue with our offensive players, so I don't think getting a striker for Pulido makes sense because we're paying Pulido so much. But the Johnny Russell, I don't know that he's going to come back next season. So finding the next Johnny Russell, I think, is one. I know Peter Vermees wouldn't find a replacement for Daniel Shalloway, but he should. So I just gave you three options.
Okay. No, I like those better than your first one. The Caden Pierre thing. Your backup right back is going to be exactly the kind of player Pierre was. He made a mistake. He's only played, 70-ish minutes? I'm not exactly sure when he came out of that game. Of course, you know, it's not going to be perfect. The more time he gets, the better he'll get. I have no worries about that. That's exactly where you should spend a homegrown player as like a backup fullback. We have two homegrown fullbacks, actually. So don't want that at all. I think this answer is really easy, and then ideally they'll free up some more money and have even more room to play with here. But one, it's the Johnny Russell thing you said, right? He's missed more time than probably anybody this season. So if you had a guy that you trusted, I was hoping Alanis Vargas was that guy. He had only played 8 minutes since he came in and scored that goal against Toronto. He did get on late yesterday, played at center forward instead of right wing, where he's probably at his best. And it didn't make a ton of sense to me, but I was okay with that sub because Shallowy still looked like he had something in the tank versus Polito always looks like he's running out of energy late in the game. You're shaking your head. You didn't think Shallowy had anything in the tank. Maybe. Maybe. I think he works hard. He's always ready to work hard. He's the new Kyrie Shelton. He does all these things off the ball that no one gives him credit for. He's making a lot of runs. He's putting in good passes. He had the pass that led to the Polito goal. But yeah, you got to score goals when you're a forward. So he does need to score. I will give him
yeah,
that.
Yeah, he does need to score. And yeah, he has a few assists, I think. But you need to score. And you're right. He is the new Kyrie Shelton.
Except for he makes even more money. But he's super capable of scoring and assisting. That's just not Kyrie's game. The other position, though, is I think the one a lot of people were saying before the season. You got to replace Scotty Kinda. You need an attacking-minded midfielder. Eric Tommy has arguably been the best player on the team this year at times. He leads the team in scoring. He's been putting in some shifts out there, for sure. He's putting in a lot of effort. But if you had another guy you could bring in, I know you're not going to like hearing this, but if it was an attacking guy, you could play him and Tommy together and put Remy on the bench when you're chasing a goal late in the game. I know Remy scored a couple bangers and you want to come defend Remy, but it's the most goals he's ever scored in a season is 3. So he's already got 2. We need someone else that's more dynamic in there if you're chasing a game. And then to give Tommy a rest too, because you don't have anybody that can play Tommy's spot. To kind of your point where you wanted somebody to be maybe a Shallowy replacement, that I think Stephen Afrifa theoretically is going to play some of those minutes. And Eric Tommy can play wide. He's been playing wide right in Russell's spot. But he's really a wide left player. That's where he played internationally for Stuttgart in Germany before he came to the States, to MLS.
I knew you were going to say Remy because you were trying to get Kellen Acosta to compete with Remy. So I'm not surprised.
It's not to replace him, but if you had 3 good midfielders.
To bench him.
I said to sub him out of the game if you need a goal. Because if you need a goal, that's not what he provides, really. Get bitter.
I'm not bitter. I think
you just said to bench him, and nobody could see your face but me. But you had some spice in those eyes.
Okay. I think that there are certain players that Peter Vermees is never going to bench. Daniel Shallowy being one of them. Bringing Kyrie Shelton in whenever he can as another. And I kind of think Remy might be in that rotation as well. I think he really likes Remy for what Remy brings to the table with his hustling. So
that said, he set Remy down at times last year to play Kinda and Tommy and things like that towards the end of the season during that run. Remy had started and played in like every game. And then towards the end of the year, he wasn't playing as much and they were doing fine.
Okay. Sorry. This puppy is insane, like licking my cell phone insanely. I don't know why.
Always makes for good podcasting, talking about the thing people can't see. Okay.
Well, I'll post
any other thoughts
online
about the signings? Okay.
No, I will just have to wait and see what happens, if anything happens.
Yeah, the summer window doesn't open until like late in July, like mid to late July 19th, something like that. So we got a ways to go. But hey, summer watch. The thing is, we could start hearing about the signings long before they can actually join the team. So I think we'll start getting rumors probably in the coming weeks, and we should have more on it. And of course, we'll cover it at the KC Soccer Journal and on this podcast. Let's talk about the good thing in Kansas City soccer, the Kansas City Current. Sheena and I sat down on Friday night on Amazon Prime. We were going to have a game night. We had all these friends and family that were going to come over, and then one of our friends got the flu, and then Sheena's like, oh, we're all going to die. There's a tornado coming. We're under a watch. And she canceled it, and then it didn't rain at all.
Yeah,
at least not up here in the North Plain. I'm glad that there was no tornadoes.
No,
but
I know.
It freed us up to watch the Current without having to try to entertain people and watch the Current at the same time. So we sat down to watch it. It really felt like it wasn't going to. We're like, man, they are just off a step tonight. Every pass, every touch. The first half was just not great. The really bad goal they gave up in the first half overall. Angel City, they felt like the goal was coming the whole time. On the goal itself, It's funny that we just named this foster puppy after Ellie Wheeler, because Ellie Wheeler got it all wrong on this play. She was too far up the field. She's pressing, trying to force a back pass, but then not defending behind her. Her and Alexis Banstra were kind of confused, little miscommunication going on. Bailey Feist tried to cover. She ran back with Alyssa Thompson, who got in behind, but then Wheeler again messed up and lost Emsley, the girl that eventually scored the goal. Thompson plays it back to Emsley. Balasager, who was making her first start, just whiffed, stuck a leg out and didn't get it. This reminds us of the way my daughter plays defense sometimes, just sticking a leg out instead of getting in front of a player. And it was 1-0. It felt really bad in the first half. Sheena, thoughts on the first half before, you know, stuff got going?
Yeah, I mean, I think you covered it all. It was just like everything felt a step behind. And the lead up to that goal, like it felt like for at least 5 minutes, like Angel City was going to score. So it wasn't that surprising when it finally happened, because I could feel it coming. And yeah, I mean, I felt like we may have, when the first half ended, I was like, man, they might be getting, losing the game because they're not playing very well. And it even at the beginning of the second kind of was the same, like they just still felt half a step behind, like, the players that typically stand up, like especially on offense is where I really felt like they were struggling.
Bia and Temwa, their touches just weren't working in the first half. It's like their chemistry was dissolving. And I was like, well, I think we both said it at halftime, like, well, it wasn't going to be undefeated forever. Maybe this is the first one they lose. Maybe Angel City was, they just played them a few weeks ago, so they're fresh on their mind about getting revenge. They're at home. The broadcast kept calling it a near sellout, and I was looking at the half-empty BMO
it
field or whatever
in.
It's called.
It
did fill
in
a little bit, but it was not. It didn't look near a sellout to me at all. Maybe it's LA traffic. It just they got there super late.
They called last week's game in Sporting Kansas City a sellout, and I wouldn't have thought that either. So you just I just think people don't show up to things.
It's so weird to me. I can't imagine spending the kind of money that you have to spend on some of these tickets. I mean, don't get me wrong. Soccer tickets are not nearly as expensive as some of these other sports, but I can't imagine buying them and then not using them, or at least not giving them to somebody else that would then use them to try to get them into soccer. I don't know. It blew my mind. But I agree with you. Coming out in the second half, still felt a little sluggish. Didn't really feel like things were going to get turned around. And then out of nowhere, around the 60th minute, Vanessa DiBernardo just literally out of nothing hits a golazo from the top of the box. It's 1-1, and then game on, because the current got going. She almost did it again a few minutes later. She hit the crossbar. There was quite a few subs. Zlatko used all of his subs. Peter could maybe learn a little something from that. Haley Mace came on at right back for Ellie Wheeler, who got subbed out, I think, maybe for the first time all season, at least the first significant sub out. Coming out of the half, showed she was having trouble with Alyssa Thompson. But then Mace helped kind of shut that down. Mace played right back instead of left back. Izzy Rodriguez started at left back. Michelle Cooper came on the wing for Alexis Banstra. And immediately, those two were contributing defensively, even if they weren't making a difference offensively. Angel City weren't nearly as potent. And then Dabinia and Lola Bonta make their return. Dabinia basically did nothing until the 90th minute, where she gets the hockey assist. She passes it to Izzy. Izzy gets it to Claire Lavoge, the fifth sub, who had come in at striker for Bia, and gets the goal, the game-winning goal. She scores again a few minutes later. Temwa, who had kind of a slow game, frankly, just made a steal, turned on the Jets, flew past everybody. God, she's so fast. It's crazy. And, you know, good at all these other things, too. Finds Claire Lavoge again. I think she, like, hit it in off her thigh, off her knee, something like that. 3-1, current win, just like we drew it up. Thoughts on the much better second half, Sheena?
Yeah, second half, way more enjoyable to watch, not as stressful once we had ourselves a game with Vanessa DiBernardo's beautiful, I think the broadcast called it tasty or delicious goal, something like that.
Well, I did hear delicious. Yeah, Mike Watts, I think, said delicious. Yeah,
yeah, I said I was going to start using it, and then I already forgot what they said. But yeah, I mean, so that gave me some hope after that goal. And then, yeah, Claire Lavoge had a, did I say, Claire's her name, right?
You said
yeah.
It right. Yeah.
I like had a moment. I just love her last name that I don't, I think I was like having a moment if I was saying her first name, right? But she had those two goals. And yeah, I think that the third goal or the second by her, it came off her thigh. She was just in the right spot. But it was nice to see Dabinia and Lowe back out there. And I feel like Michelle Cooper had a pretty good game. You were kind of knocking her on her at first, saying she wasn't doing anything. And then she had some really good plays. Maybe they were more defensive plays, but I'm a huge Michelle Cooper fan, so I didn't like that.
I thought she just looked a step slow at times, and it could just be her getting her fitness back and getting up to the speed of the game, but there was just slow reactions and things. But yeah, it slowed down Angel City once she got onto the field, so I'll give her that. She definitely made a defensive impact, even if I don't know that she added a ton to the offense.
Well, she didn't need to because we had players doing their thing. And so
they didn't score till the 90th minute to get that second goal.
It doesn't matter.
They got it done. I'm not complaining. I'm happy. It was great. We were joyous. We were joyous when we watched it.
Yeah. It almost feels like sometimes, and this isn't a bad thing, but when they're playing really good, I was like, man, it's almost not even fair to these other teams. Like, they're so good. It's fun. I'm glad that they're playing really good because it takes the frustration I feel about Sporting Kansas City kind of off. And I'm such a huge fan of the KC Current. And so I love that they're playing this good of soccer, and I hope it continues all season. It's hard to imagine it's going to like break down. I just feel like it's a good roster. And as we were watching the game on Friday night, I don't even think I shared this thought I had, but I was like, man, I hope they can bring every single player back. Like, I really like the team the way they are right now. I don't want to see anybody not come back next season.
No, it'll be interesting to see that actually Xander Kennedy, who co-hosted this podcast 1 week with me when you were gone, he wrote a story today for the KC Soccer Journal Sunday. So it's already out there by the time you're hearing this. And it was basically just gushing over the depth of this team. It's crazy how deep the team is. There's so much talent. We haven't even seen everybody yet. Nichelle Prince is still not returned. Like, remember they traded CC Kaiser for Nichelle Prince? Poor CC Kaiser playing for the awful Houston Dash. They traded away Maria Sanchez this week, who's one of the better players in the entire league. The San Diego Wave. She demanded a trade after signing the richest contract in the NWSL. It was the richest for at least a few minutes until Mallory Swanson got a better deal, or maybe Sophia Smith got a better deal. I don't know. Both of them probably got better deals, but she's one of the top paid players, and she's now on the Wave. So Prince should be back soon. Hannah Glass shouldn't be too terribly far away. Mallory Weber, I'm not sure about her, but lots of players getting on the field. Two things I wanted to go back to. You mentioned Lavoisier, or we were talking about Lavoisier. You like to say her name. I asked you during the game, is she your new favorite player? Because you love French players, apparently. And here's another French player. But my actual real question is Claire Lavoisier the backup center forward on this team? She sometimes is kind of suspect in defense. She tends to play kind of an attacking midfielder role, but she's tall. She's got good size. She seems to have a nose for goal, because this is the first time I think that I can ever remember them playing her at center forward. Maybe she did in a little spurt here or there, but she moved up there when Bia subbed off, because Bia, I think, got stepped on her foot or something and had to sub out.
Hurt.
So that could be a concern, but she went in there and scored two goals in her first ever, as far as I can remember, time to play center forward. I think she's played on the wing before, but never center forward. So is Claire Lavoisier a center forward for this team?
Well, I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't have her be the backup until she proves that she's not supposed to be in that spot. I mean, she is the reason, I mean, not the reason, but part of the reason we won the game so late in the match. So I think that's a good position for her. And I think you continue playing her there until otherwise.
Yeah, I'm definitely open to seeing more of her there, because the only other person, well, I think Michelle Cooper could probably play center forward. That's where she, I think, was lining up at least her last year in college. And then the other player who typically plays center forward, but we have not seen in weeks, is Kristen Hamilton. She wasn't even on the bench, I don't think, yesterday, which is weird. It made me wonder, Are they maybe going to trade her? She's not playing. She's a person that can easily play 90 minutes game in, game out. She did it a lot for this team when they really needed it a couple of years ago and they're really banged up. And she can't get on the field anymore. It's got to be frustrating. I like Kristen. She's a good player, but she just feels buried on this depth chart. So we talked about a week or two ago, someone probably has to go to make room for Hannah Glass when she comes off the season-ending injury list. Maybe it's Hamilton. Maybe she gets traded for future draft picks or more allocation money so they can keep signing more players in the future. I know you said you wanted everybody to stay here, Sheena, but thoughts?
Well, I forgot about Kristen Hamilton, so I guess
Ouch.
I
Oh, she's the
know,
new
I
Courtney
know.
Ford for you.
Oh, I know. Oh gosh, no, I have such a deep spot in my heart for Courtney Ford. So, but yeah, I don't know. It's tough. Yeah, because you have Hannah Glass that still needs to come in, and yeah, I mean, I could understand how some players are going to get buried and not get the opportunity to play, and that would be frustrating if you have, 90-minute quality in you and you're on the bench and you're never getting in. I wonder if that's a situation where she would ask to be traded, just knowing that she could probably get playing time on another team.
Yeah, it wouldn't stun me at all. And the fact that she wasn't on the bench made me think maybe there's something going on there because I don't know why you wouldn't have a talented player like that on your bench. But she hasn't really gotten into many games. She scored in the first game, and then I think she subbed on for somebody got injured. Oh, maybe that was the first game, actually. She subbed on for Dabinia. She just hasn't played a ton. She has under 100 minutes on the season. She's played less minutes than the 16-year-old Alex Pfeiffer. So maybe. Maybe she's gone. One other question from the game. I don't know if I told you this fun fact. So you were talking about Claire Lavoisier. You're questioning if her name was Claire. Well, they call Claire Hutton Junior because she's another Claire. So they call her Junior. Lowe told us that after a game. But Claire Hutton got a really early yellow card against Angel City. And you and I were both talking like, oh, Lowe's back. Maybe they'll sub Lowe in for her. And then I think, what confidence does it show from Vlatko that he says, no, second game in, I think it's the second game in a row where Claire had an early yellow, but he left her on Hutton, Claire Hutton, just to be clear, two Claires, and let her play the whole game on that yellow. And she managed it and she played well. 18 years old. Oh, I'm so impressed with her.
Well, I think the at least in the game on Friday, she got it trying to stop the Angel City player from going into the goal. So she purposely took a yellow. So I'm yeah. So I think that she's a smart player. I think that ideally, if you're on a yellow, you have to be extra careful. And I think it does show a lot of trust that he has in her to keep her on, because also being young and being new into the league, you might be more likely to make a mistake. So the fact that he's kept her in for two games when Lowe could have, I mean, Lowe did come on, but Claire Hutton also stayed on. So that's also an interesting dynamic as well, having two players that it sounds like play the same position on at the field at the same time.
Yeah, I would say Hutton is more of the defensive midfielder between her and Bailey Feist and Lola Bonta. They do play kind of with a double pivot, kind of what Sporting have been playing, right? With two defensive midfielders, but Hutton seems like the one that usually stays further back. Lowe or Feist have the ability to range forward a little more, which is kind of evident, right? Because Labonta has scored goals over the years. Feist already scored a goal in her little few minutes that she's gotten to play. She's looked really good. What a team. Was such a talented team. Any other thoughts on the KC Current Angel City 3-1 victory?
No, I was just glad that they left with a win, and it's just so exciting and so fun to watch them. And like I said before, it really makes up for the fact that Sporting Kansas City is stinking here lately. It's nice to have like a bright light in soccer in Kansas City, and we have two because of the Comets, but their season is quickly winding down.
Yeah, finals on Tuesday. It can't all be perfectly good at the KC Current. We do have to talk about a story that came out from The Athletic this week. The Current have fired their head of its medical department, Carlos Jimenez, for a violation of the NWSL's non-fraternization policy. Multiple sources confirmed to The Athletic that it's due to a relationship that he was having with a KC Current player. Jimenez just joined the team in December. He previously worked for the Washington Spirit last season and actually the U.S. Women's National Team from 2019 through 2021. The Current put out a statement on it. Quote, "When we learned of Jimenez's actions in violation of club and league policies, he was immediately terminated. we remain committed to making sure our policies and practices ensure a safe place for our players and our staff, end quote. So Sheena, he basically is a supervisor, is how they look at it. He has this like authority over people. So because of that, he is not allowed to date players. It makes sense to me. And as far as we know, nothing unwanted happened here. We don't really know much about it, assuming that it was a mutual situation, like the player and him both wanted to date each other or whatever the relationship was, then I get why he had to be let go, because he broke the rules. So I'll give you a little background. I teach an HR course at my company, my massive corporation that I work for, and we talk about relationships at work and how we don't discourage them. We actually encourage relationships at work, but we have a process for reporting if you're having a relationship, and there's one thing if it's your peer versus another if it's like it's your boss or somebody that has kind of a manager type role or a HR role or something that's over you. And all we do is we just move them to different departments or different teams. No big deal. We're a massive company. It's no big deal. You can move them to another team. But the current are so small, you can't do that. So I get why the guy had to be fired. But I want to see the best out of it and say that hopefully it was mutual. And you know, we'll probably get more details on it if it wasn't. But what were your thoughts on it, Sheens?
Yeah, I think that, well, first of all, I just want to know who the player was. Like, I want the tea on that.
I want the tea, too. I'm trying to be professional over here, but yeah, I totally want to know, right?
Well, as the casual person who doesn't do media stuff, I can say it. I want to know who it is, and I hope it was somebody age-appropriate, for one. But yeah, it's tough because I'm sure like you work in close quarters with all the players, you know, given the role that he had. And I could understand how things could maybe come about and how feelings might be there and dating and all that. But it feels like maybe this was kept under the rug and they weren't. Maybe if they had just been open about it from the get-go, maybe it would have had a different outcome. But I don't know. I don't have a lot of thoughts on it, but I hope that it was a wanted relationship on both ends. And I hope that if it was serious, it continues. Like, it didn't end the relationship because he was fired. So I don't know. I don't have anything too profound on the topic.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people getting pretty upset about it online. And I just wasn't finding myself being too upset. But of course, it depends what comes out about it, right? If it's unwanted, then that's a whole different situation. But there's no reports of that so far. So let's hope that that is not reported, because that's not the case. And like you said, that it's a mutual relationship, and that if they want to continue it, hopefully they can continue it. He's just going to have to find himself a different job, it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, and I understand where the outrage would be, because there's been so many times in women's sports, like the U.S. women's gymnastics team is always what comes to mind, and how those girls were taken advantage of by Larry Nassar, the sports coach or medicine doctor, whatever he was. So
sports coach, medicine doctor.
He wasn't the coach. He was the doctor. Sorry, I have a puppy crying behind me. It's hard to focus. But yeah, so I understand where the where people get nervous about it and might be irate.
All right. Well, let's talk on. Let's move to errors and corrections. So we've not done this segment in a few weeks. And frankly, I didn't listen to the entirety of our last podcast. We may have multiple errors in there. But the two I want to highlight are, one, sorry for the audio. We don't pay for the service that we use to record our audio tracks. And they had a recording issue with our tech, and we didn't have the time to sit down and re-record it. Bummer that it ended up being the way it was. Hopefully it'll never happen again, but we shall see. The other error and correction, we were letting, you remember the TIFO from last week, Sheena, the Sporting KC TIFO? And I was like, it's the gates of the blue hell. Apparently, it's a reference to the Divine Comedy. It's this like Italian work of literature from, I don't even know, like the 14th century or something. It's super old. But essentially, it introduces the idea of hell. Like, it talks about hell. So I think we were kind of right? But we definitely didn't know that it was the Divine Comedy. So if you didn't, I highly recommend you watch the Behind the Shield for this last week, because they did a little behind the scenes of like what went into making it. And you get to see Daniel Shalhoub, and then Andreu Fontes is there with his kids. And I think his wife was there too. And they were painting the TIFO. Fontes actually went on the Sporting KC show and talked about how his girls love painting TIFOs. And they're like, when can we go back and paint more TIFOs? And yeah, those are two cute little girls that he has there. It's funny because the host, Blake Arney, he keeps asking, who would you trust to watch your kids? And he's like, well, you know, a lot of the guys on the team are fathers, so I could trust all of them. But then he said, Shalhoub, if I have to pick a non-father, I'll pick Shalhoub. He said he's very responsible. But Behind the Shield, check it out. It's really good. Every week, Thursday at noon, Sporting KC release essentially a 10 to 15 minute documentary about your team. So that's kind of fun, even though when it's not going well.
I feel like Daniel Shalhoub would be really good with kids. Like, so I could see that. Like, I guess I don't know about the responsible part, but he feels like he would be good with kids based off of, I don't know. I think based on when I've seen him interact with the players' kids after the games, like he picks up Johnny Russell's kids. I think I've seen that a few times. Maybe
well, Fontes has your back. He believes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to issue something as well with last week's episode. So sorry for the audio. I felt like I couldn't even listen through all of it. And I listen every week, all of it. I've learned to accept the sound of my voice and all my little cadences that I have. But I felt like I was dominating the podcast. Like, at least when I was listening, I could barely hear you, Chad. So it sounded like it was just a one-person podcast on my part. And I was like, oh, this is cringy because I don't know what I'm talking about. But I was going to say in last week's episode, I said that I thought Eric Tommy ran like the Terminator. And I guess there was, since we were talking about TIFOs, a TIFO a couple years ago of Eric Tommy as the Terminator. So I guess I wasn't the first one who had this thought that he runs like the Terminator.
Yeah, and I had forgotten about that TIFO. I mean, I knew it existed, right? Because it's like, we'll be back. It was just half his face. But I wasn't taking it as like they were calling him the Terminator. And nobody seemed to say that that was his nickname or anything. I just thought it was, hey, Tommy's a player that showed up. That was the end of 2022. And he had signed, him and Agata had signed on the same day. Essentially, they announced it. And they were lighting the team on fire. They would look great. And they're like, hey, even though we're out of the playoffs and we're not going to be here come playoff time, we're going to be back next year and we'll be as dangerous as ever. And it took a while, but that's true. They did come back pretty good in 2023. It took till game 11.
Hey, I got an idea. Maybe I should go paint a TIFO. Hope that Fontes is there and then somehow figure out how to watch his kids. Since I always say I want to.
At all. Oh my gosh.
I know. No, I'm just kidding. But I always say I'd make a great babysitter because I love hanging out with little kids. I just don't want like them in my life on the daily. So I'm not going to really do that. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. Don't worry. And now I don't want to go do a TIFO painting.
Now you made it weird. We have we talked about going to both the St. Louis and the Miami TIFO paintings, and then just life came up and, you know, our kids in club soccer and there's hours and hours of practice every week. And frankly, we're just sometimes tired after work and we can't suck it up and pull ourselves together to get it done. But we're going to paint a TIFO at some point. We absolutely have to get out there and do it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe we can meet some of our fans. Some of our fans are out there painting TIFOs. So it makes you so uncomfortable. We're just people. They're just people. It's fine.
I know.
It's fine.
I know. I feel like there's a lot.
Sheena.
I know.
You get so weird.
All right.
Let's go digital crawling to get out of your uncomfortable zone here. So the Kansas City Current, they unveiled some stadium renderings of construction that's going to be coming up around CPKC Stadium over the next few years. They're going to break ground after this season, it sounds like, or maybe early next year. Primarily, it looks like all these new apartments and businesses and maybe parking garages as well are going to be built on top of the gravel parking lots. The KC streetcar extension is supposed to be done by the time this construction is done. But again, this construction will be going on starting next year, and this won't be done for a while. I'm not sure how they're going to handle parking in between, but I love a good rendering. They were beautiful renderings. Sheena, current rendering posts around the stadium, thoughts?
Yeah, I love renderings as well. And I'm excited about these renderings to see them come to life because they're making it into like a whole district, I would call it. There's going to be restaurants and there's going to be things to do before or after the game, to go eat and whatever else. My only issue with it, I didn't even care about the parking situation. Parking will work itself out. But I feel like it's way too many apartments and it's just going to get congested. It looked congested in the renderings. So that's my only complaint about it, is that there's going to be too many apartments.
No, there's definitely a lot going on down there. I feel like if we were young and we didn't have like all these pets, and although there is the Barkay is right down there too, so I guess you could take your pets there, but didn't have pets and dog and family and home life and all the stuff that comes with the lives, the old people lives that we have, that it'd be cool to live in apartments that are right by a stadium and kind of everything's hip and walking distance and go out and kind of socialize and walk to the stadium, and it'd be a whole event every time. But for now, that's not really my life. I'm not interested in that, but cool for somebody.
Maybe when we're empty nesters.
I'm going to live in this house forever. You're going to have to drag me out of it.
Okay, never mind.
All right. We're supposed to go fast. Let's go faster. The digital crawl. Next up, Oakland Roots of the USL Championship have signed Sheena's boy, Dom Dwyer. Take a shot, everybody. Dom Dwyer made it into a podcast. Sheena, I know we're supposed to go fast, but real quick, thoughts on Dwyer to the Roots?
Oh, good for him. I like that he's going to be in the same state as his kids again, so... Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that because she plays for Angel City. We just played Sydney LaRue. Yeah, it feels like he's been trying to find a team forever. So maybe he was holding out for an MLS team and decided finally to settle for this. Hopefully he's getting paid pretty well. What, you know, second most prolific goal scorer in Sporting Kansas City history. So I root for Dwyer. I like him.
Are they still in the cup? Are they pulling like what Iowa did?
Oh, like in the U.S. Open Cup? Are the Oakland Roots in there?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Oh, that was my thought, is maybe they were signing him because they were in the U.S. Open Cup and they were pulling what Iowa did. I think Des Moines, which I feel like you're looking this up. I just want to say something. I wanted to say this at the beginning of the podcast, but like, we're sending all our thoughts to people who were affected by the tornadoes in Oklahoma, Nebraska, Iowa, Northern Missouri. I'm sure they were in other states. I know we have listeners in some of the states that were hit. So I hope you guys are all doing okay. If there's anything, you know, that we could share with our listeners on resources to help people, please share those with us so we can pass them on.
Sheena got bit by a dog in the middle of that answer. If you're wondering,
sorry.
Why she said, ow.
Yeah, sorry. So
I echo what Sheena said, and that gave me enough time to look it up. The Roots did advance. They are facing the San Jose Earthquakes on Tuesday, May 7th. So if they advance far enough, then yeah, Sporting Kansas City could have a bit of a reunion. Well, assuming Sporting can win some games, they could have a reunion with Dom Dwyer and play him as he plays for the Roots. They're going to have to start overcoming some upper division teams because all eight MLS teams are entering the competition this round. So we'll see. Something to watch out for. Next up, we're supposed to go fast, but this is another kind of talky subject. The city of Indianapolis announced a plan to seek a new MLS expansion team. It seems the USL Championship side, Indy 11, who have a plan to make a 20,000-seat stadium right by Lucas Oil Stadium, are being left out of this. I only read a tiny bit about this. Sheena, you actually brought this one to my attention. I think I saw some tweets, but I didn't go read it because I was just working or something. But weigh in for me. What did you read about this? What do you know about this? Is this mayor of Indianapolis a scumbag? Do we not like him immediately?
Well, I feel like the whole thing is real shady because, yeah, like you said, they have the plans, the renderings. I think they were breaking ground on a 20,000 person stadium right near Lucas Oil Stadium where the Indianapolis Colts play. So it sounds like it would be a good option. And yeah, the mayor kind of sidestepped that and met with Don Garber and wants to do something different. And it sounds like Indy 11, they just celebrated what, their 12th year as a team or their 10th or... They just had
it might have been the 10th anniversary because they're saying the mayor made this announcement on the 10th anniversary of the Indy 11, like a big old F you to Indy 11. So
yeah,
not looking good for the mayor, for Garber, for people are saying MLS are trying to kill the lower divisions of soccer the way they are treating the U.S. Open Cup. If they do this and they put another city or another team in Indy that theoretically would kill one of the biggest franchises in the USL Championship, why not just bring the team over like they did with FC Cincinnati, Orlando City, and on and on and on? Plenty of teams have come from the USL into MLS. If they're going to expand, which we know they're going to because it's worth so much money, let's just keep that culture and that history and let that fan base grow even larger.
It reminds me a lot of what happened in San Diego with the San Diego Loyal. Yeah. Like that's what, it's a different situation kind of, but it's very similar in some aspects where that San Diego already had a loyal fan base and then they sidestepped that and they did this other deal. So not a great look. There's a really good article. I think I'd have to find the tweet, but we can find the tweet and put the full article in there that breaks it down. But there's renderings in the article of, I think they were calling it 11 Park, where they were going to be building the stadium. And kind of like what Casey Current's doing, there's going to be restaurants. It's going to be a whole entertainment district. So I don't, it's not a good look. Hopefully they make right by the situation, but I don't know. It doesn't look like that's going to happen.
All right, let's go super fast the rest of the way here. Former Sporting Kansas City 2 goalkeeper Ethan Bandre has signed with the first team of the Colorado Rapids through the end of the season with options for multiple years after that. Congrats to Ethan. He didn't even get to play a ton for SKC 2 because Pulskamp and McIntosh were eating up those minutes. So best of luck to him. The USL Super League, which is the USL's new women's league, have their first signings, and they are all former KC players. They're all three go to the Tampa Bay Sun FC, and they signed Erica Timrak, Jordan Listro, and Dami Richardson, all who played for either FC KC or the Current. So congrats to them.
The one thing I did see is that if Indy 11, if that they go with a different MLS situation, it could put the, I think Indianapolis is one of the teams that's getting the USLW team, and that could put that at risk. So that's something else I saw.
Oh, that would be a bummer. Yeah, I just want more teams, more soccer. I want people to be able to watch men's, women's soccer all over the country. All right. Speaking of soccer that people are going to want to watch, Olivier Giroud, you may have heard of him, French national team striker. He is officially coming to LAFC, the rich get richer. He signed an 18-month deal with a possible option year, according to Tom Bogert of The Athletic. He will be a designated player, which is good because sometimes these incredibly talented players come over and they are somehow not DPs. Sheena, I don't think you know who Olivier Giroud is, but he's a handsome fella and you should probably Google him.
Oh, okay. I will. Okay,
there you go. Last story. Missouri girls soccer getting a little shout out here. Park Hill South, which is up in our neck of the woods. We actually practice at their facility. Number one in the state in girls soccer. Pretty awesome. They beat Park Hill last week. I think we're going to watch our daughter's future high school against them in the coming weeks here. So that should be interesting. And congrats to them. Number one in the whole state.
Yeah, that's amazing. I had no idea they had such a good soccer team. But yeah, I mean, there was a lot of Kansas
some
City
of the girls
teams on
that play on our daughter's club team, like previous versions of it, younger versions of it, are on that team. So congrats to them.
Yeah, there was quite a few Kansas City teams that made the list. So Liberty was on there. I can't remember what other ones.
There's a bunch in the top 25. Yeah. I saw Lee Summit. I saw all kinds of them. Pleasant Hill, tons of them. So yeah, way to go, KC. And if you're looking for some soccer to watch this week, I actually got quite a few games for you to check out here. The Kansas City Comets are at the Chihuahua Savage. That is MASL Finals, the finals for the title. Chihuahua's now up 1-0 in the series. Game 2 will be on Tuesday, April 30th at 9:05 p.m. Central Time. You can check that out on CBS Sports Galazzo Network. If KC win, they'll immediately play game 3, the little mini game, right afterwards. So we're going to have a champion by the end of Tuesday night. Let's hope they bring a title back to Kansas City. It's been a while. Nobody's won a trophy here since 2017. Sporting Kansas City, speaking of a team that won that trophy, they won that U.S. Open Cup. They're going to be at Real Salt Lake Saturday, May 4th. May the 4th be with you, my fellow Star Wars nerds, at 8:30 p.m. Central Time. KC Current are at the Houston Dash on Sunday, May the 5th at 12 p.m. That's the revenge of the 5th, if you want to keep the nerdy Star Wars theme going. And then finally, Sporting Kansas City 2 host North Texas SC, with FC Dallas's affiliate, Sunday, May 5th at 6 p.m. So, hey, you can head out to Rock Chalk Park and check that out. If you've made it this far and you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Tell your KC soccer friends to listen to, or if they need a team, they should probably be a fan of the Current. I can't really support them being a fan of Sporting KC, but, you know, if they're desperate, they should follow them to KC Soccer. It's the place to be. And we want to interact with you all online. Feel free to give us a follow on social media at For the Glory KC. If you hit us up on Twitter, that's Sheena, but you can also reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, Threads. You can email us fortheglorykc@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayFor90 or on Blue Sky at Chad C. Smith. And here is Splitter Conspiracy and the KC Cauldron to play us out. Take care, everybody.
Bye, soccer friends.
Thank you.